At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler,
best-selling author,
actor,
and lead singer of Fozzy.
Now
he's rocking the podcast world.
Yay!
This is Talk Is Jericho.
Talk Is Jericho,
starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. And the People's Podcast has arrived. Let's go for a ride. Da-na-na, fooling. Da-na-na-na-na, fooling. Da-na-na-na-na, fooling. Da-na-na-na-na, fooling. Wa-na-na-na-na-na, wa-na-na-na-na. It's a new one for you there, man. Really kicking it and loving it. One Talk Is Jericho. So excited to be here with you this week on Podcast One. Christian is here. Very, very cool cat. I taped this interview a while ago. Once again, had to wait for it to be aired at the right time, in the right place, in the right situation. And I ain't talking about Jersey Shore. How you been doing? How you been liking the shows lately? I've had some great ones. Really enjoyed last week's Metal Week with Vinnie Paul and Rob Halford. So cool to be able to do so many great guests, both in wrestling and in music. Very excited. Speaking of music, Fozzy, new record coming out on July 22nd. Do you want to start a war? You can pre-order it now where all good pre-orders are available, iTunes, Amazon, Google, whatever you want. Super excited. I mean, Lights Go Out now, once again, top 40. And found out the other day that Lights Go Out is actually it's top 10 on the DJ strip club lists. Which means all the DJs at strip clubs, I guess they put together their list, and they have this amazing top 10. And it's super crazy who's actually on the top 10. So it's the Panda Top 10 Strip Club DJ Charts as compiled for July 2014. Number one, Summer, Club Killers Festival Trap Extended Mix, Calvin Harris. Two, Fancy, Iggy Azalea featuring Charlie. Three, Recess, Skrillex, featuring Kill the Noise, Fat Man Scoop, and Michael Angelicos. Four, Turn Down for What, DJ Snake, featuring Lil Jon. Five, Lights Go Out, Fozzy. Six, Latch, Disclosure. Seven, Satisfies, Nero, number seven. Eight, Take Out the Gunman, Chevelle. Nine is a Trey Songz, and 10 is Wiggle, Jason Derulo featuring Snoop Dogg. So the top 10, there's only two rock songs on the entire chart, and number five, Fozzy. So, you know, if the strippers are liking your show, liking the music, you know that they're rocking it. So Lights Go Out, getting right up there. Don't forget, too, July 24th at the Whiskey A Go-Go, if you're in the Los Angeles, Hollywood area. come on down and see Fozzy live at the Whiskey. We're super excited. It's going to be the Do You Want to Start a War release party, first concert on the Do You Want to Start a War tour. We're playing new songs. Definitely a must-see gig if you're in Southern California. Come on down and see Fozzy live at the Whiskey. War at the Whiskey, as we're calling it. Also this week, returned to the ring for the first time. Sunday night in Toronto, I worked with The Miz in the first match I had in a year. And then Monday night, also working with The Miz on Monday Night Raw, my first Raw match in a year. And I'll tell you what, it doesn't matter how long you've been doing it. And for me, it's almost 24 years in October. You're still always a little bit apprehensive. You know, will I still be able to do this? How's it going to feel? Am I going to be sore the next day? I'm recording this Tuesday morning after Raw. And I'm a little bit sore, I got to be honest with you, a little bit stiff, but then I just bang out some DDP yoga, huge sponsor of the show, a good friend of mine, and suddenly I feel good, feel better now than I did 10 years ago. That's one of the reasons why people say, how come you can still come back and you still look young and you still got it? And it's like, I've never lost it because thanks to DDP yoga, it's been better than ever. But it's funny though, you go online, you see some people like, you know, Jericho sure has aged since his last return, so he's going to have to get over the cosmetic differences by having better matches and better promos. And I'm like, you know, screw you, man. I think I look pretty good. I work hard to not look aged. So for that guy, he gets a big Jericho patented raspberry. That's what I got to say to him. You think I look aged? Age this. But overall, amazing. It was funny because in Toronto, Miz and I had a match and basically just threw it all together last minute. And people are like, oh my gosh, this was an amazing match. Best match of the year, match of the year. And of course, then that word gets around to the websites and the dirt sheets. And everyone's like, oh, Jericho, match of the year already. And I wouldn't go as far as to say it was match of the year. It was a good match. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it. It was fun. And it was just good to be back into the ring. And good to be back on Raw. I mean, like I said, last week on Raw, I was kind of hiding in the shadows. In the back area, in the parking lot, in the parkade, as we say in Canada, on the tour bus. So I didn't really get a chance to see anybody. And then, of course, Monday, get a chance to walk around and talk to people and getting some great interviews for Talk is Jericho, which is very cool. A lot of people are like, now that you're back in WWE, are you going to get WWE interviews? And it's like, I've always had WWE interviews. So that's not going to change. You're still going to get the same collection of diverse guests on this show. So still, very cool. And then, of course, yesterday I mentioned to you how my jacket always kind of goes out. And once again, here I am. I try the thing, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 times during the day. I'm up in the gorilla position, ready to go out, turn it on, and the whole right side is dead. And I have literally like 2 minutes before I have to go out for the live match. And so it just so happens that the prop guy, you know, the guy who usually helps me fix my jacket, was standing right there. Literally took out a piece of gum, put it onto the wire. We found the broken wire, and that actually the piece of gum held for a bit. But then once I put the jacket on again, we couldn't get it going. So what am I going to do? It's live TV. I go out to the stage. I kind of turn to my left, really cheat over to the side. So hopefully it minimizes the fact that one half of the jacket isn't working. But there's nothing I can do about it. And like I said, these jackets are very temperamental. They're prototypes. And now, even though I spent a lot of money extensively to get that jacket fixed, the red one is still being fixed. You know, I'm folding it up. I'm putting it in a suitcase. It's coming on a plane with me. It's getting unfolded. It's going through the metal detector. It's coming out of the metal detector. People are looking at it. They're handling it. You know, those wires are very thin, and sometimes they just break. So literally, lights go out for Jericho on Monday, both on my jacket and when Bray Wyatt interrupted me. And it's funny, when Wyatt interrupts people and the lights go out, when the lights go out, you can see all the blue lights in the arena. It looks like my jacket. So it's actually, I think, a tribute, a homage to Jericho. Really looking forward to heating things up with Bray Wyatt. I think it's going to be an amazing feud, an amazing angle for the summer. And also for the summer, the anthem of the summer. Just got some huge news about Lights Go Out for in regards to the WWE as well yesterday. So I'm going to stop talking and start rocking. Let's hear Lights Go Out right here on Talk is Jericho. And that's what happened to me the other day on Raw. Lights go out indeed. Check it out. Crank it up. All right, if you liked it, let me know on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho, at Fozzy Rock, at I am Jericho. Go pre-order Do You Want to Start a War as soon as you can. If you do so, and tweet us on at Fozzy Rock, a screen shot of the pre-order, I will post it and we will follow you. So there you go. That's my deal just for you. Coming up, we got Christian, multiple world champion in the WWE, I believe it's 2 times. TNA champion, WFWA, Tony Candelo, wrestling champion, the male nurse, all of those things. We're talking about everything.
Talk is Talk is Talk is Jericho.
Welcome back to Talk is Jericho. Sitting across from me, my former tag team partner, former tag team champion partner, actually. Christian is here. Drove in today, sent the limo for him. It might not got to the right address, though. I'm not sure.
No, I think it was a little late, so I just took my own car.
Yeah, you took your own car. Which one did you take, the Mercedes or the Lamborghini? Or the?
Actually, I flew in my helicopter.
Did you?
Yeah.
There's a helipad up here on the top of... Did I ever tell you that we record this when we're in Tampa at the studios of Bubba the Love Sponge? So thanks to Bubba for letting us record here. It's a very nice place. So
it's pretty awesome.
It's good to have you, man. You're one of the guys that I wanted to have on this show when I started it.
Yeah, I know. You called me a bunch of times. Finally, you annoyed me enough that I...
Yeah, I was finally able to get you. Plus the big fat check that I sent along. The thousands of dollars will go good for your house. But
if I slur my words at all today, I almost bit my tongue off the other night in the ring. So my tongue's a little...
Isn't that the worst? Yeah. I remember doing actually with Bubba one time. It might have been a match that we had, and I chomped it down. Yeah. That's probably one of the worst injuries, right?
It hurts. I don't know if you can see this.
Oh, yeah. It gets all fat. And what happened?
I just landed on my face, and it was one of those ones where you land wrong or awkwardly or whatever, and your tongue's in the wrong spot.
Yeah, when you chomp in there. I remember one time, LTS, Lance Storm, told me the story of Hiro Yamamoto. He became Tenzan in New Japan. They were in Germany. He bit his tongue so bad, they had to stick a weight on it to have it, to pull it out, to hang to the ground so they could put stitches in his tongue. Like,
it's the worst.
The worst injury you could have, right? Well, I mean, you just had, you just came back from injury.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been injured a few times over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're back on the schedule. I mean, back in the grind. And how is it? I mean, how long were you off for? About six months or so?
It was right after SummerSlam. I got a concussion. And, you know, they don't mess around with concussions anymore, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Very, very cautious.
It's interesting. I guess maybe after Eddie passed away, they really started getting
skeptical,
that sort of
stuff? Well, I think they started to, like any other major sporting organization, just educate themselves and their performers, you know, about these types of injuries. And you know, the more that you know we go along here, we learn more about the long term effects of these things. And they're just trying to be on top of it. And you know, and our business a lot of times is it's protect the performers from themselves.
Yeah,
I've always been, you know, that old school mentality of never let them know when you're hurt.
It is funny how it's changed. I remember. Vince would always say, you know, let me pull you back in. I'll tell you, if you go as far as you can, but sometimes I have to pull you back in. Like if you wanted to do I don't know, moonsault off the cage or some of those lines, but that really is kind of the old school mentality of when you get hurt, you don't say anything.
Right. Yeah.
And it really has changed. I remember even last year when I was working with Fandango in that short program that we had leading to WrestleMania, he did a leg drop from the top and hurt his hip or something happened or got a concussion and he told them and then, it was actually after we had our angle. He was supposed to win the title, I think. And he told them, and they pulled him from it. And then after that, it kind of just started going downhill. And it's like, I was like, what are you telling him that for? And it's like, well, I had to. And it's like, that's not how we came in the business. Wouldn't say anything.
To be honest with you, it's like I said, it's the smart thing to do.
Of course it is.
Long term, you know. And I don't think it's just in our business, but in any major sport where, you know, injuries are you know, can happen at any time. You know, it's you got to think about your future, and I think in that respect they've gone above and beyond.
Is it they've really implemented that, like you said, because it wasn't that way. I mean, it's kind of the way the business was, and now there's a lot of tests. I mean, the drug testing is all the time. I know when I came back, I'm sure when you did too, you have to go get your heart checked, cardiovascular checks, And then when you do, I mean, every couple months we have to do a concussion test.
Right. Yeah. The impact test.
Impact test. Yep. Is that what you had to do when you had the concussion?
Yeah. Actually, I did the impact test, the one on the computer. And then they actually sent me to a specialist in Pittsburgh and I did an in-person impact test with the doctor, which is kind of even a step above that. So, you know, they really were taking precautions.
And they show what the impact test is you sit in front of a computer and they show all these designs and symbols and patterns and
words. And then they flash words up on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they'll say, just remember this for later. And then, you know, they'll do a bunch of other drills type things. And then like all of a sudden, did you see this word? And they'll flash a word up like out of the blue.
Yeah.
And you have to, you know, say whether it was really a word or not.
It makes you feel pretty stupid.
Yeah.
You know, like I feel really dumb whenever I have to do it because you're already worried, like, do I have a concussion or not? But like, man, I feel like an idiot.
Yeah.
But you know?
Yeah. It's definitely interesting, you know, and the one that I did in Pittsburgh with the specialist there was like, you know, even a little bit more intense like, you know, doing it. So, but, you know, I was happy that I did it and, you know, we did some, I had some balance issues too.
Really?
Yeah.
From the concussion.
Yeah. I actually had to go see a therapist to get my balance back.
Really?
Yeah, I had no balance. So,
how did you get the concussion that you?
It was just one of those things. I just kind of hit my head, and it was just one of those ones where I took a regular bump and I just smacked my head on the mat, and it just kind of knocked me a little bit loopy, and then you know I was kind of still with it, and then I think I hit it a couple other times during the match. So I think it was a couple other times, but at the end of it, I didn't really remember much.
We had Chris Nowinski on the show. And he was explaining concussions and, you know, we all know it too, but he was saying whenever you see like a flash, if you know, you see like, you know, seeing stars, that's a concussion.
Well, that's the thing too. He was telling me that, you know, actually it was only a couple weeks after having a concussion, I saw him and we had we talked about it. And, you know, he was even saying that, you know, years ago, you know, even when they would say, oh, you just got a ding or you just got your bell rung, you know, even that is considered a concussion.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like things that we never
thought about.
We just never thought about it.
The way it was.
Right.
So, you know, you've been in the WWE for, I mean, when did you start? 99, 98?
98, yeah.
So that's like a good 15 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, on and off. What do you see that one of the biggest differences in the company is? I mean, obviously we're talking about how they've really upgraded their fitness regimens and their testing and all that sort of thing. What about like other differences that you've noticed?
Yeah, I think that obviously the way that the talent is brought in now is obviously changed quite a bit, especially with the Performance Center down in Orlando. I think that's probably the biggest difference where, you know, when I first came in, you kind of cut your teeth or learned your, you know, try to perfect your art, so to speak, you know, under independence or going to Japan or, you know, and then you get a tryout or something of that nature. Or they were even starting to do training camps in Stanford at the head office where they would just bring in a, 10, 12 guys for a week and have a look at the guys and run them through a bunch of drills and, interviews and promos and things like that. So I think that's probably the biggest difference is the way that the talent is filtered in now compared to in the past.
Yeah, now they kind of come in almost like draft choice, go to the minor leagues, and 6 months later or a year later, they're in the big leagues on the big show.
Yep.
That's a lot of responsibility and a lot of pressure for guys. I mean, it took me years to figure out what the heck I was doing.
Right. Yeah, it is. And, you know, I mean, how many years later, you know, you're still learning every time you get in there,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
That's the way I see it anyway.
And
just when you think you know everything, you realize that you don't.
Right.
And it's, I think that's the good thing about the Performance Center and NXT is that it actually is kind of like raw on now, especially since the network is launched and they're going to show it actually on the network.
Yeah, now
and it's going to have some coverage and that. So I think that it'll kind of be raw on a smaller scale. You know what I mean? So they'll have a little bit of a feel for it rather than just performing on smaller events.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you just show up one day and you're in front of, 15,000 people on Raw in front of millions of people. You know what I mean? That is a huge transition.
Sure.
And, you know, it's almost like that deer in headlights type of effect. But I think this way is a little
eases people
in a little bit more and gets them prepared a little bit.
Right.
A little bit more on that.
Well, let's talk about how you got in the business. I mean, I know we had Edge on and you guys have parallel careers.
Mm-hmm.
You were friends since high school and he got in the business, got into the training first by writing that story.
Right.
How did you feel when he started training and how long was it like till you kind of said, well, I got to get in there too?
Well,
and how?
It was kind of one of those things, you know, we've actually known each other since sixth grade. And we actually became friends because of wrestling. You know, we were,
right.
Yeah. you know, we were both like infatuated with it. And then,
Your favorite when you were?
Obviously, I was, you know, a huge Hulk Hogan fan. Yeah. You know, I was also, I loved, you know, like anyone, Randy Savage, mm-hmm. Ricky Steamboat, Ted DiBiase, Cowboy Bob Orton. Those were the guys.
All the classics.
Yeah, those are the guys that I like to watch, you know. And, you know, we'd read this at the time, like before the internet or all these things where you could, you know, kind of get some news or information, whatever. You know, they had an article every Saturday in the Toronto Star. Where this guy would talk about, you know,
ring reports,
whatever. So they I guess with this school in Sully's gym where we ended up training, they had a contest, and we both said we were going to write in and write this essay, and I never did it, and Adam did. So after he got accepted, I was kind of like, oh man, I guess I should have wrote it in, you know. And I didn't, but I just actually, you know, I went down with him when he first started training, kind of sat in and watched a little bit. And I would go with him to all the shows when he would start doing shows. So I guess it was a little bit, maybe a year and a half after he started. You know, I knew I was going to do it. I just didn't know what the timing was. And obviously I didn't have the money coming out of high school and all that. So we started going to Humber College just on the outside of Toronto, actually in Etobicoke. And I got a student loan mm-hmm. for college. And of course, you know, it was for, you know, rent and food and tuition and all these other things. So I went down and I had a little meeting with Ron Hutchison, who was my trainer. And we talked about, you know, different ways I could start training and how I could have this payment plan and all this sort of thing. So I ended up taking a portion of my student loan and I paid for my wrestling school with my student loan. Yeah.
Unbeknownst to your parents, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, they had no clue.
Yeah, you wouldn't tell them.
I think I'd been training for probably like 6 or 7 months before I finally told my dad.
How much was the tuition? Do you remember?
I think it was like either $1,500 or $2,000 or something like that.
Yeah. It's pretty much the standard, right?
Right. So, but it was pretty funny. So I went down. So I would go to college during the week, and then on the weekends, I would go down Saturdays and Sundays, basically, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day, and we'd get in the ring and we'd train and work out. And
then once you did that, I mean, did you ever repay your student loan, by the way?
Yeah, I actually have a funny story about that.
Okay. You're free to tell it.
You want to tell it right now?
Sure,
okay, I didn't know if it. So
we won't tell anybody.
Okay. I didn't know if it was going to, you know, interrupt.
No, I don't have any plan.
Yeah, I noticed that, you know, yeah, you're really prepared for me, a blank sheet of paper with a pen on it.
Yeah, exactly.
You're really prepared hard for this. I appreciate it. Yeah. So what happened was, so after I finished, school, and I was still kind of coming out of training and starting to work, you know, just little local independent shows. And I think for my first show, I made like $10 or something.
Yeah.
So I got a job at a wood mill. It was like the most brutal job you can ever imagine, you know. And it was like I had to be there at like 7:30 in the morning, and it worked like 4. And it was like, you know, the middle of summer, and you had to wear long sleeves.
Oh, yeah.
And you had to have like headphones on because of all the saws. Then you had to have goggles on and earplugs and just like – anything you could think of, like you had, it was like sweaty
gig,
and hot,
right?
And like sawdust would be stuck to you when you left.
Getting it down your shirt.
Yeah, and I remember.
Itchy.
So they came in, they basically trained me for like, you know, 30 minutes. Okay, you do this, you put the wood over here when you're done cutting it, blah, 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 blah. This guy, if you have any questions, ask this guy, whatever. So finally, I remember like the first day, I was up in the lunchroom and I'm sitting around, I'm seeing guys that were like, you know, 40, 45, that have been there doing this stuff for like 15, 20 years, you know, and mm-hmm. I'm like looking at them and they're, I'm like, man, I'm pretty much doing the same job these guys have been doing, and I've been here for an hour. And I'm like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
You know, I got to make it, you know? Like, that was like, you know, whether I do or not, I mean, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that I do. I can't end up like this, you know?
Right.
So, like, to get through the days, I would literally, you know, be thinking of, like, names and, like, matches and feuds and different things that I could do, you know? And just, and then on the weekends, I would try to take bookings here and there or whatever, and I'll never forget this one point in time. You know, there's this kid, and he was the same age as me at the time. He was like 19, and he was working this one saw. And I guess, you know, they had to level the saws because the saws, you push a pedal and the saw would come up through underneath the table, right? And I guess the saw wasn't level, and it was just coming out of the tip of the slit in the counter where the saw would come up through. So anyway, I guess there was a piece of wood, and the guy just went to brush it away, and the saw was coming up just enough that it cut a part of his thumb off.
Ugh.
And I just remember everybody rushing over there and this and that, and them like wrapping the hand up and taking the guy out. And the guy comes over, taps me on the shoulder, goes, "Yeah, you need to cover for him." I'm like, "What?" This guy just had his thumb cut off. And I'm like, you know, I'm standing like 10 feet away as I'm putting this board through, and I'm like trying not to get near the saw at all. And I was just like, man,
this is not for me.
This isn't for me, man. So anyways, that kind of gave me a good kick in the pants, and I got out of that and started doing just some odd jobs here and there while I was trying to make ends meet. So I had a payment plan, obviously, for my student loan. And, man, this is taking a long time.
We'll edit it all out later.
Yeah, that's cool. So I had a payment plan for my student loan, and, you know, the payments started going up and up, and I didn't really understand mm-hmm. at this point, you know, interest and all these sorts of things. Yeah. I didn't.
Banking terms.
Yeah, I couldn't comprehend that at the time. So I call them up, and I was like, hey, you know, these payments keep going up, and, I can't afford it. And they're like, well, this is the reason why, and this is how it's set up. And I was like, well, if you leave it here, I can pay you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you keep moving up, I'm not going to be able to. So if you do it this way, at least you're getting something.
Yeah.
And like, man, I'm sorry, that's not how it works. And I was like, so they just kept bumping up. And I was like, I'm just going to stop paying it. You know, I can't afford it.
What are you going
to
do, right?
Yeah. So sure enough, they pass it along to a collection agency. And, you know, I would get calls here and there. And they, you know, it was better part of a year. They would call me, and then I would kind of explain to them what happened. And then they told me all the things that were going to happen to me, and I was like, okay, you know, I have nothing. So, mm-hmm, I mean, like, mm-hmm. I don't know what you're
right.
thinking you're going to get from me, you know? And yeah. So finally, after four or five collection agents, this one guy called me, and I'll never forget his name. His name was Snooks.
That sounds shady.
At least that's how he referred to himself. And,
yeah.
So he called me, and he's like, yeah, you know, your file's been passed around the office for like a year, and everyone's kind of, you know, given up, and because, but I'm going to get you. Like,
Bookman from Seinfeld. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, you know, cool, whatever. So then he's just like, so he'd call me weekly, and we'd get in arguments, and either, you know, he'd hang up on me or I'd hang up on him. And so somehow, I don't know, I guess he did some digging or something, but he found out that I was a wrestler.
You know? Oh.
Yeah. And, or inspiring wrestler. And he called me up and he was talking to me, did you get a job yet? And I was like, well, you know, I'm still doing these odd jobs and whatever. Blah, blah, blah. He goes, so I hear you're a wrestler. I was like, well, yeah, how'd you hear that? And he's like, he goes, I got my sources. You know, he's already taking this too seriously. So I was like, all right. He goes, well, obviously you're not very good. Or else you'd be able to pay your loans back.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I said, you know, it doesn't work like that. You know, it's like anything you have to, you know.
Now he's insulting you.
Yeah, he's insulting me. So he's like, well, you know, you're not going to make it, obviously. So why don't you just, you know, suck it up, be a man, you know, quit this, you know, dream you have and go get a job like every other normal person and pay back your debts. And I was like, I said, I intend on paying back every penny, you know, but I'm not going to give up on my goals here just to, you know.
Yeah,
so
I'm not going to let you bully me, Snooks.
Yeah, so we got into it, and, you know, that continued on for another 5 or 6 months until, you know, I ended up signing with WWE. And and then, you know, when I got a few checks in the mail, they were a little bit more than I'd ever made before. So I called old Snooks up, and this is the first time I'd ever called him. So I think he was a little thrown off. And he's like, oh, what are you calling me for? I was like, yeah, I got a job. I was just wondering, you know, what's it going to take for me to clear this up?
Yeah.
He's like, well, we can set up a payment plan. And this is like, no. How much is going to take me to pay it off one shot, one check? And he's like, you have that kind of money? I was like, well, I do now. And he goes, well, if you don't mind me asking, where'd you get a job? I was like, WWE. I don't know. You might have heard it, the highest rated show on cable television. This complete silence on the other end. Oh, and before this, he had said to me they had a nickname for me going around the office, and it was No Future Riso.
No.
Yeah, that was my nickname. And then he's just quiet. I was like, yeah, so much for that no future theory, huh? And then he's just like, I was like, so just tell me the amount. He's like, well, this is the amount. I said, no problem. You'll have a check next week. I said, oh, and by the way, you know, next month we actually have a show in Toronto. I'm going to send a couple tickets to you. You can come watch me perform. And he's just like, I said, hey. I said, you know what, though? I'm sure we won't ever talk again, but I just wanted to let you know, while you're sitting in your cubicle and driving your Pinto, I'll be retired by the time I'm 40. Have a great life. And I hung up on it. But here I am, 40, and I'm not retired.
So. Yeah, but if it wasn't for Snooks, he gave you the motivation to make it. So, Snooks, if you're listening, F you and thank you at the same time. So what was it like when you first got into the WWE? I mean, I know you mentioned that you went through the training camp, and that was with Dory Funk, I think it was, right? How did you
get on their radar, I guess I should ask?
Well, what happened was I'm sure Edge has probably told the story, so I'll kind of you know, condense it here a little bit. He had gone out to Bret Hart's place and done a little bit of training. He said when the time was right, he would help him get his
Your name along.
Yeah. So Adam and I were teaming out east on the east coast of Canada for Emile Dupree yeah. this summer, and we were teaming. And Leo Burke, who was kind of training for Brett when he was on the road, the guys that were at, out at his place,
mm-hmm.
he had come home because he was originally from there, so he came home to visit, and then he came to the shows and watched. And he saw me, and he liked me, and he's like, hey, when Adam comes out, why don't you come out and train with him? I was like, oh, cool, because he was going to come out when the,
yeah.
at the end of it. So went out there, did that. Adam, actually, we went straight from there after it was at the end of that summer, September. We went out to Calgary. We stayed there for about a month. We went to Winnipeg to do some shows in Winnipeg, and they called Adam when we were on tour in Winnipeg to come down.
Mm-hmm.
Brett got him a look. So he ended up signing a developmental deal. And then it was, I can't remember exactly how many months after that, probably 6-8 months, they had some shows. Actually, it was the infamous pay-per-view in Montreal.
Mm.
And then they had Raw in Ottawa. And then they were taping Raw the next night in Cornwall, Ontario.
This is like a Canadian loop in right. your area.
So they had asked Adam to come and perform in some dark matches. And then he called me. And, of course, he didn't have a car. I didn't have a car, but my parents had a car.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I borrowed my mom's car and we drove. You know, I took him within, you know, wrestler code is you never go anywhere without your gear.
That's
brother.
Right. Yeah.
So I threw my gear in the trunk and off we went. And
I'm sure some sweet gear too.
Yeah, it was probably, it was pretty awesome. Actually, it was like purple and black with like gold
stars
and tassels and stuff. Yeah. It was pretty brutal. So we went to the pay-per-view, went to Raw. He wrestled Glenn Kolka in the dark match in Ottawa. And then mm-hmm. the next night in Cornwall, I can't remember who it was that came up to me but said, hey, did you bring your gear? And I said, of course. And they said, okay, well, would you like to do a dark match against Adam tonight? And I said, yeah, I'd love to. So Adam and I ended up wrestling a dark match. Yeah, that night in Cornwall. And the funny thing is that arena seemed so big to me.
Yeah.
When I was like, oh my God, there's more people than I've ever performed in front of. It's huge. And then I went back years later and I was like, man, this.
It's like a hockey rink,
yeah,
right?
It's, yeah. It's like so small.
Yeah, it's funny.
It's like, so we went out, we actually, you know, it was like, you know, mentality of just, God, we just got to do so much stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and we're just like doing things that didn't make any sense. We're just mm-hmm. doing all these moves and stuff. It's hilarious. And I think, actually, I think the match might be on one of Adam's many DVDs.
Saving it for your first one.
No, my goal is to get through my career without having one.
Okay. Well, so far, so good.
Yeah, right. But, we did the match and like there was so much stuff going on because all the things that had happened, like the.
Right, with Brett and the whole.
Actually, I think. Maybe Jim Cornette was the only one that saw it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he came up after, and he was like, oh, man, that was great. Da, 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 da. And, you know, so I think kind of got on the radar that way. And then whether he, you know, passed along whatever information he got from that or what he saw, he had told me they were starting to do training camps mm-hmm. at the office and that, you know, they'd put my name on the list. And when the time came, wasn't sure when it was going to be, but, you know, when the time came that, definitely be invited to one, sort of to just mm-hmm. kind of keep in touch and to you know keep doing what I was doing and just get as much experience and as much
right.
ring time as I could in the meantime, which I did. And then that was like in was that November,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So of 97. So then like July of 98, I got a call to come
to the big leagues.
To the training
camp. Yeah, yeah.
So I went down and you know it was so funny too because. I was wrestling a bunch of independents at the time, and I had one that treated me really well. It was Jim Kettner's ECWA in Delaware. And, you know, he was like the only guy that was flying me in at the time. You know, I would drive from Toronto to Buffalo, and then I'd take a flight from Buffalo to Philadelphia. It saved me the 12-hour drive down to Philly, but it was paying me, you know, more than I was getting paid anywhere else. He mm-hmm. was flying me down and treating me really well. And, you know, I was a champion of his promotion. And, you know, when they invited me to the training camp, the only problem was is like the night before there was an ECWA show.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was like, man, I don't want to, you know, kind of leave this guy high and dry. So I called back after I said, okay, we're going to start the camp. We'll fly you in. We'll bring you to Connecticut. And so I called back and I was like, oh, I have a little bit of a problem. Like, what's wrong? I was like, well, the night before, I was already booked for a show and this guy treats me really well. And you know, I don't want to just last minute cancel on him and, you know, kind of screw up a show. Kind of one of the main guys on the show and he, you know, he advertised me and stuff like that. And we kind of have like this kind of program going on and stuff. And I just don't want to leave him in a bind, you know? And they said, well, we'll call you back. And they hung up and I was like, oh my God, I think I just screwed up my chances with WWE. Oh my God, what did I do? You know?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, call back 10 minutes later and said, okay, look, this is what we're going to do. First of all, we really, you know, appreciate the fact that you like to keep your commitments.
Yeah. That's important. Yeah.
And they said, we're going to help you out. We're going to fly you to New York, just like we were going to on the Saturday. We're going to have a car take you to Delaware, the show, take you back, and you can start the camp the next morning. How does that sound? I was like,
that's more than anybody's
ever. Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Yeah, so did that, and like, I remember I actually like pulled a muscle really bad in the match that night. I went back, and I was like kind of hurting, and I remember like trying to ice down before the
tryout.
Yeah, before the big tryout and stuff, but it went well, and it was a great week, probably the most memorable week of my life up to that point, where
sure,
you know, just being in the ring so much, and the guys that were there, and you know, I was offered a developmental deal before the week was over, which I wasn't sure if that was a normal thing or whether they evaluated.
Nice confidence boost, yeah, for you, so, though, right?
That was pretty cool. You know, they said, you know, we're not sure. You know, we just feel like you're pretty far ahead of the other guys that are here, which was nice to hear. And said, you know, we'd like to offer you a little something just so you have some income coming in, and we kind of lock you up for the future, and we want you to keep doing your thing, going out there working, and then just kind of clear up a space at the end of every month for you to come back and do these training camps until we decide, you know, on something permanent. So, you know, congratulations. And, you know, it was pretty funny because they said, you know, well, they were leaving for a pay-per-view. That was on the Saturday, and they were leaving that afternoon for a pay-per-view. They said, oh, you know, we'll get back next week. We'll have the paperwork drawn up, and we'll send it to you. And if you don't have it by next week, you know, call. And I was like, okay. So sure enough, it didn't come. And I was like, oh, my God, did they change their mind? Oh, you know, what's going on? So I'm like, took me an hour at the phone. I'm like, do I call? Do I bother them? Do I not? You know, what do I do? So that I was like
trying to call a chick or
something. Yeah. So I finally called them, like, hey, remember how you said that if I didn't have the contract by next week, I should call? Yeah. Oh, you didn't get it? No, I didn't get it. Okay. God, if it's not there by next week, give us a call. All right. So I'm sitting there by the door. Sure enough, it doesn't show up. Now I'm like, oh my God. So I call again, do the whole thing. Next week, it doesn't show up again. Now I'm just like, okay, they don't, you know.
You're getting the runaround.
Yeah. They're like, oh my God, they, you know, this is really happening. I bothered them so much. They don't want me. You know, it was like the next week I was just kind of sitting there reading the paper in my parents' living room, knocking the door. It's the courier, hands me a thing, open it up. There it is. And I was like, oh my God. And then,
hallelujah.
Yeah. So then they come and say, hey, just sign it and send it back. I was like, well, no, I'm coming down for the training camp next week. I'm just going to bring it to you and hand it to you in person. They're like, okay, whatever you want. So that's what we did.
We are talking to Christian J. Riso, one of my closest friends on the road.
Brother.
Where did you get the name Christian, by the way? It was Christian Cage at first, right?
Yeah. What happened was you know, I was sitting in my buddy's living room, and I always had the name kind of Cage in the back of my head. I just thought the name Nicholas Cage was, like, just a cool name.
Yeah.
You know? Like, Cage was just an awesome, like, last name.
Yes.
So we're sitting in my buddy's living room, and we're going to do just, like, a little indie show somewhere, and, you know, it was, like, you know, my first or second match. We didn't really have a name or anything, so we're just kind of tossing out names, like, well, maybe this, maybe that, and... So, like I said, I had the name Cage in the back of my head, and then the show Extra was on, playing on TV while we were sitting in the living room talking, and they were doing a story on Christian Slater.
Ah.
And I just looked at the TV, and then I looked back at my buddy and said, well, what about Christian Cage? And he goes, that kind of sucks. I'll work for this show, and then we'll change it after. So, use it, and then it just kind of...
to this day, right? So, and so when you went to, you know, you did the camps, and you debuted with the Brood, with Edge and Gangrel, how do they... approach you and say, this is what you're going to do? Did they know your gimmick right off the bat? Did they know what look they wanted you to have?
Yeah, it was actually at the end of a training camp. We're doing a little spot show in Boston. At the end of the last couple camps that I had there, they would take us down and we'd do some shows at the end of each camp with Killer Kowalski. And they just kind of put us, you know, some of our matches on their shows and just to get us out there in front of a crowd and that sort of thing. So it was one of those. And then, I think they maybe just saw at the time my look, like I had the long blonde hair. Adam had just debuted on TV as Edge not long before that, and he was doing a little something with Gangrel, who also had the kind of blonde hair and kind of that. So I think that with the history of myself and Adam already kind of built in, the idea was there for me to kind of come in as an underling of Gangrel, kind of like that kind of Lost Boys type feel, just from the look with the hair and the kind of, you know, just that whole vibe. Then eventually do something with Adam. I'm not sure if they were going to have a feud and then end up doing what they did, which was, you know, bring him in and have the Brood. But I don't know, I'm not sure exactly how, because I wasn't sure how it worked at the time. You know, I was like, oh yeah, cool, man, sounds awesome. And I started doing, like, you know, coming up with all these ideas and looks and different stuff and whatever. So I was just super excited to get my foot in the door and in something that was like, just didn't walk down the ramp as, hey, here's the new guy.
Sure. And, no, I mean, it was in the middle of the Attitude Era where, I mean, it was on fire. And you had some huge, huge names. So you needed something.
Yeah, you had to kind of come in. You know, like I said, I had a little bit of a step up on some other guys that were just kind of debuting there. And I came in with somebody that was being established already into a storyline that was, you know, about to start to take off.
Yeah.
And, you know, you factor in that entrance.
That was one of the best ever.
You know,
one of the best ever.
Yeah. So it's like, I really lucked out.
How did you feel coming into the WWE? Obviously, where, you know, you're like me, you're in real life, you're not, but in the world of wrestling, you're a smaller guy.
Right.
How did it feel like? Were you intimidated when you, like, when I got there, everybody was a giant?
Right. No, you know what? I this is the way that I always viewed it. When I the day that I walked in for my wrestling training, my trainer looked at me and he said, he kind of looked me up and down and he said, this is the price. This is what we do here. Looked me up and down again and said, you're probably not going to make it. You still want to do this?
Right.
I said, absolutely. Where do I sign up?
Yeah.
So right off the bat, I kind of had a chip on my shoulder right away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, this is going to be, it's going to take everything I have to make this work, you know? And that was okay. Cause, you know, I always feel like I deliver better under pressure. I always feel like I, when there's a challenge, you know, I always kind of rise up to it. So, I took it as a challenge right from my first day, quickly kind of figured out for myself, you know, you have to figure out what works for you. You know, anybody can tell you, hey, this is going to work, but really what it comes down to is you got to figure it out for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And from an early stage, I realized, okay, I'm not the biggest guy. I'm not the strongest guy. I'm not the best high flyer. I'm not the fastest. I'm going to have to be, I can't be great at one thing. I'm going to have to be good at everything.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to be able to adapt to any situation that I'm in. If I'm wrestling a guy that's, you know, 100 pounds heavier than me, or a guy that's 30 pounds lighter than me, or a guy that's my own size,
right,
I'm going to have to be able to adapt. So that's kind of how I viewed.
Yeah. And it was a smart way to do it too. And but also you always had a great personality and you always interjected that into.
Yeah, which it was just funny because I never had any experience before I got to WWE with talking on the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had a real, and still to this day, I'm actually a little bit reserved and a little even shy when I'm around people that I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's, but once, you know, I get a little, if I'm comfortable around somebody, then I kind of come out of my shell a little bit more, but I'm, you know, kind of a mellow, reserved kind of guy, you know, and it's,
It's funny. I remember when I first met you in Winnipeg on one of those Tony Candela shows, and I was talking to Don Callis, the Natural, and we were talking about, because Edge was there, Sexton Hardcastle, and you were there as the male nurse. Even, I think it was. The gimmick was the male nurse.
Yeah.
But we were talking about, something about Adam came up, and I remember Don saying, yeah, well, Adam's great, but the guy who's really funny is Jay, is Christian. I was like, that guy? He never talks. It's like, no, when you get to know him, he's really funny. And I always remember him saying that because that's exactly the case. But so do you think the first real kind of breakout moment for you and Adam and the Hardys was that ladder match series where you had the best of seven that ended with that monumental ladder match at the one pay-per-view?
Yeah, I think that was kind of, you know, Matt Hardy had said at one point, he said that took us from being, you know, WWE wrestlers to WWE superstars.
Superstars, right.
You know, and I think that kind of sums it up the best. I think that we were all trying to find our way at that time, trying to do anything. Said in an era where there were so many superstars. I mean,
like, yeah.
You know, big time stars.
And Rock and Austin at the same time, the two biggest stars, you know.
So being able to get on the show and be factored into the show every single week and on every pay-per-view, you know, was a big deal. And we got to that point where we were.
Mm-hmm.
And we just looked at it as, you know, everybody has to, you know, seize that one moment that they have. And for us, you know, that was it. You know, we got to put everything we have, you know, our bodies on the line.
Right.
Risk, you know, high risk. And it was kind of the first thing we ever kind of pitched. Whereas, you know, hey, you know, we have this, you know, because we were doing the tag team matches, you know, on Heat and here and there on Raw. And then on the road, we were doing the tag matches and they were getting great, you know.
This would be Christian and Edge versus the Hardys.
Yeah, they were getting great reviews and things like that. So, you know, we kind of just pitched that idea. I said, look, we don't know where this ends, but, you know.
You pitched the best of seven?
Best of seven, and we could do a different match every time with a different kind of stipulation that culminates in the first ever. And we were all huge fans of the Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon ladder matches, you know, that kind of, you know, put the ladder match on the map. And we're just like, you know, no one's ever done it in a tag team setting.
Mm-hmm.
And we would like to be the kind of first guys to do that. We don't know what the stipulation is, but okay, well, you know, and then that was kind of, and then next thing you know, we were doing it. And then, you know, they added the stipulation to the end. with Terry Runnels managerial services and $100,000 on the line. And I just remember because that was the time when Edge and I came through the crowd, and right before we went for our entrance, you know, we went up and then we were sitting in some concession stand behind some in the storage room of concession stand
at the pay per view
waiting to hear music to walk out. And I just remember like my mouth was so dry and I was just like, man, this is it. You know, this is the chance. You know, it's kind of all or nothing here. And we went out. It was just like, you know, it was just, that was the moment, you know, like lightning in a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just worked out.
Well, and yeah. And I still remember that match. It was a real kind of a groundbreaker, a pioneering match.
Right.
And you were kind of, you and Edge were like the tag team specialists, mm-hmm. you know, you guys were known for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the 5 second pose and,
yeah.
you know, the thing with Angle. And then you started really having a real comedy edge to you as well.
Yeah.
You must have loved that because you're such a smart ass.
Well, that's the kind of thing too. It's like nobody ever seen any personality from me.
Yeah.
Even when we were doing the Brood thing, you know, Gangrel was kind of the
focal point. Figurehead. Yeah.
Adam was the guy waiting in the wings.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't think they really knew what they had in me at
yeah.
that point. But, you know.
You were just the third wheel.
Yeah, but yeah. I don't even know if it was third wheel, but it was, you know, I just don't think they, you know.
Really understood it, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, hadn't seen what you had to offer.
Right. So it was like, you know, it was still kind of like a blank page, so to speak. You mm-hmm. know? So, you know, I didn't really have a chance to talk. I remember we did the first, you know, when they let Edge talk for the first time. Like, okay, I'm going to say this and say this. And, you know, we just want you to kind of stand there and just, you know, they'll ask you a question and just look at the microphone like you don't know what it is and walk away. I was like, okay. You know? So when we started doing that and also with the fact that Adam and I were such good friends and we just kind of started doing stuff that we did mm-hmm. like in our everyday life or in the car driving or just things that would make us laugh, just ridiculous stuff. And we figured if it was making us laugh and we thought it was funny, just throw it out there and see if it worked on
right.
television. That's
right.
kind of what we started doing, you know? And, it was a little bit easier that I had somebody to play off of rather than going out there and just doing it myself and whatever. Cause you know, we could, you know, throw things back and forth
mm-hmm.
and make it a little more entertaining with two guys. And it really helped me come out of my shell and become comfortable speaking in front of such a large audience on such a big stage. And, you know, I'll never forget like one time we were doing something on Raw and I'll never forget it. It was just like, I completely went blank of what we were even talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started babbling on about something and I was like, oh my God, that was the worst thing ever, you know?
And
I remember seeing Vince the next day and he walks up and he goes, oh, great stuff last night. And I was like, are you serious? I was like, I couldn't remember like anything that I was going to say. I was talking about something. I went completely blank. He goes, oh, he goes, yeah, he goes, you know, when you're, you know, it's when you're in your position, you have your kind of character you guys have. It's, you know, it's great. It's great television. You know, don't even worry about it. I thought it was great. So I was like, oh, okay. You know, and then, you know, kind of made me feel more comfortable. Hey, there is a little room for error here,
mm-hmm,
room
mm-hmm.
to grow. Because
there's a lot of pressure,
yeah,
especially
yeah.
when you get mic time. It's like, I can't
yeah.
make a mistake
because yeah.
I might not get any.
And
anymore.
That's how you get better is by making
that's
mistakes,
right, that's
you know?
Right.
And then, so ever since then, you know, it's kind of.
I remember we had a highlight reel with a couple times. I remember you and I had one with Steve where he forgot what he was supposed to say.
Yeah,
and we had to kind of like, yeah. so like, he's supposed
like
to,
what you're telling me is.
What you're saying is that you want yeah. us in a match at SummerSlam. Yeah. Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. And even Vince one time, I remember he forgot his line. I had to do the same thing. And afterwards, I was like, you forgot your line. He's like, no, I didn't. Okay, you didn't. No, you just jumped the gun. But I mean, yeah, there is a lot of pressure there. And it's funny because I remember when you and I were put together as a team, I think both of us weren't really doing anything, and it was
right.
in Vegas when there was a TLC.
Yeah.
So they put us together just like, Jericho and Christian will be a good team. And then
yeah.
like for the next year, we were a team. Was that was what happened.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It was just kind of coming out of the Un-Americans thing at the time.
Yeah.
And I don't think I was kind of in limbo, you know, it kind of disbanded. And I think they were going to put Regal and Lance together as a team and they really didn't know what they were going to do with myself or Test. So yeah. And it just happened that they did this, the Raw Roulette. And they wanted to have the tag match with one guy in each match had been in a TLC match.
In the past or something?
In the past,
yeah, yeah.
Got to pick a partner.
Right.
And then, you know, you were my partner. And then it was like literally like the week after that, I think we won the tag titles in Montreal or something. But I know it was a real like kind of whirlwind kind of kind of happened.
Because the chemistry was there. Because
we
had a lot of fun. Like we could really put together matches and work the matches. But I remember just the character wise.
Yeah.
There was a lot. I remember, what did we say in Montreal? Like, you're like, Femme LaBouche, francophones.
Yeah. Yeah. Shut your mouth,
like, frogs. Shut your mouth,
yeah.
frogs. Like, which is like a derogatory term yeah. for French people. Yeah. Like we won and we were pouring champagne over
yeah.
Terry Runnels
yeah.
and just whatever we could do to kind of amuse ourselves. because we had similar personalities.
Yeah.
Do you remember, this is a great story, and I don't think we've ever really talked about it. We went to India.
Yep.
And we came back from India, and that was a week when Vince told Brian Gewirtz, the writer, I want you to make me laugh, Brian. So Brian came up with this scenario where you and I have our clothes stolen by Booker T and Goldust.
Yep.
And then we'd spend the rest of the show trying to find our clothes. But everyone got sick in India.
Yep.
Like people were they were puking and passing
remember,
out.
It was like literally 30 minutes before we went live, and we were in the opening match with Booker and Goldust.
Yes.
And all of a sudden we see Booker getting carted out with an IV.
And
on a stretcher because he's like dehydrated from he caught some sort of bug over there, and it was like, what's going on? And then just like everything got changed.
I remember him getting to see him wheeled past us.
Yeah.
And like what? But earlier in the day, and this is the story that really made me laugh about this, was that when we had our clothes stolen, we would go out to the arena with towels on and be yelling at, you know, Booker T and Goldust.
Yeah.
And then somebody would come and pull our towels off, and we'd be naked on the stage.
Right.
And I was like, well, how are we going to be naked on the stage? And I think it was Michael Hayes, well, you just be naked. And I was like,
are you kidding me?
You really want us to be actually naked? So how else can you do it? I'm like, we're not being naked. There's no way. You can tell Vince there's no way we're going to be naked. 5 minutes later, Vince wants to see you guys. We go in his office, and he's like, everything okay, pal?
Yeah.
We're like, no.
It was more you. I was kind of standing there. You were just like,
you would have done it.
I was like,
you would have gone naked.
I probably would have. But it was like, you were just like, no.
I was like, there's kids in the crowd, and you want us to be standing out there completely naked with our balls hanging out. And he's like, well, how else can you do it? Like, how much has it changed in the last 10 years?
Right. Yeah, you could even.
And I was like, put one of them little, like, you know, Rubik's Cube digital things and let us wear like
skin colored
thongs.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I guess. He actually, that crazy bastard, actually wanted us to be naked. and then, like you said, Booker gets carted out, and then they put the Dudleys in there last minute. And that, it turned out great. I mean, it was a mad panic.
And we did everything that night was live.
We were supposed to do live.
Everything
completely live.
Yep.
Yeah. And they stole our towels, and then we ran around. And
hijinks ensued.
Hijinks ensued. Yeah. I remember also, too, another one of our big moves was we'd hug during a match, and then you'd grab my ass.
Yeah, mostly on the live events.
Yeah, on the live events.
Yeah, not on TV.
Just grab my ass.
Because just mainly because you hated it.
Yeah.
And every time you have to be like, hey, man, can you just like not? I was like, yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know why I do it. And then like every time, and then somewhere on the internet, I think there is a picture of me with my hand.
Oh, there's plenty of them on there. There's plenty of them on there. We'll be back with more Talk is Jericho right after this.
Talk is Jericho.
We're back here, Talk is Jericho, with Christian. So we were talking about all the, you were kind of known almost as a tag team specialist, and a lot of that with Edge, and we had some fun in our time as well. Two questions. Did you feel kind of constricted at that point in time? Because you were always kind of in a tag team. Did you feel like you were ready to be a singles?
Yeah, I think that the thing is that, you know, with any act, the last thing you want to happen is for it to get stale.
Yeah.
And I think that we realized that we had a good thing with Edge and Christian. And like any tag team, at some point, you're going to have to go your separate ways.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to get it to the point where people are like, God, all right, this act again. And then when you split up, no one really cares about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we thought if we split it up a little bit, maybe before people were ready for it too, that it'd be something that people would want to see. And if we ever did get back together, it'd be something people would be ready to see again rather than drag it out too long. So, and I think we both had aspirations to be singles wrestlers too, and it's a new challenge.
It almost seemed too like you had been so tied in with Edge for so long. Mm-hmm. Did you feel sometimes that you were kind of always, not under in his shadow, but if it was always Edge and Christian, it would always be Edge and Christian?
Yeah, I think people put more stock in that than I did, or he did.
You know
what I mean? Like, we've been best friends since we were in sixth grade.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, it's one of those things, you know, everything happens. You can't, like, I mean, he was an amazing performer. And the thing is that you can't, I never got jealous or mad about his success.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I was always proud of him.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always thought that had nothing to do with what I was doing. You know what I mean?
Which is the only way to look
right
at it.
So it's, you know, and everything happens, you know, for a reason, and different situations call for a different type of performer, or, you know, when the doors open at certain times, you have to take advantage of them. And those same doors don't open for everybody. Right. You know, so it's just everybody's path is different. Mm-hmm. And that was his path and this is mine. And that's okay. I've had a great career. I don't regret anything that's happened in my career.
Well, you've more than proved yourself now. Right. I'm just talking about back in those days.
Yeah, yeah. No, I definitely felt it was going to be a little bit of a challenge.
Because if you look at like every tag team, there's always the one guy, like, you know, like Marty Jannetty, Shawn Michaels, Jim Neidhart, Bret Hart. There's always one guy that kind of went further, but you guys both went pretty much equally.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we always knew when we were teaming that when the time was right, you know, we were going to split off and
yeah,
you know, pursue our singles careers.
Dude, yeah.
And yeah, I was a little nervous when we split, went our separate ways. And the problem was for me is when we split, I still fought like a tag team wrestler.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So it was trying to get out of that tag team.
Now, how do you mean? How,
like I just, everything, when I saw a match, I saw it as a tag team match. You know what I mean? It's like,
gotcha.
It was just, it was hard for me to envision putting the pieces together or something. Like now I can just kind of close my eyes and I can see how I want a match to play out, or I can see the story of it or whatever. Like that's really easy for me. At that time, it wasn't. Every time I thought of something, it was like, you know, it was more of a challenge. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's making any sense.
It does, but because like, the one thing to explain to people listening is when you turn, for another example, turn from babyface to heel or heel to babyface or
mindset.
Tag team to single, it does take a while to adjust.
Right.
It really does. Mm-hmm. And I can totally see what you're saying, because if you've done majority tag team matches or if you're majority of a babyface, it's hard to switch into, well, how would a heel do this?
Right.
You know, I remember Flair always had that problem when he came back in 2002. He could never think like a babyface. Mm-hmm. He still thought as a heel, even though he was a babyface.
Right. And then that's the thing, too. You know, and then, like I said, when I came out of that, I was, you know, I had a lot of people in my ear, too, you know, not necessarily giving me bad advice, but a lot of people giving you advice. And the problem is you don't want to upset anybody. So you're taking, you know, trying to work everybody's, the advice that everybody's giving you, you're trying to put that in there because, you know, you respect them and you respect their opinion. But then at the end of the day, you know, it's just, it's too much. And it just, it's, it doesn't matter. You know, everybody's philosophy or vision is a little bit different. So you have to kind of take the pieces that work for you and what it is you're trying to put out there. So I got so low to the point where I had no confidence in myself.
And that's the worst place you can be.
And you know, I was, you know, I wasn't really doing anything. And then I wasn't having fun, which was the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And then went home. And, you know, it was taking it home with me where I was like in a bad mood when I was home and things like that. And then I just kind of looked in the mirror and just said, you know, why am I doing this? You know, what are the reasons I got into this business? You know, and I just started reminding myself all the things I loved about it, trying to get back to that feeling that I had when I started training. And then I was like, you know what, no matter what happens, I'm just going to go out there, do what I do and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And from that moment on, I just went out and, you know, I would listen to people's advice. Oh, thanks. I appreciate it. But I would just take the bits and pieces that I felt that I needed for me.
Right.
Apply them. And then I saw myself starting to kind of slowly rise back up because I was getting that confidence back. Like, you know what? I'm really good at this and I'm just as good as anybody in this company. And now they're going to see it. And I just slowly started to get that confidence back. And once I started getting my confidence back, I just felt the ball starting to roll to, you know.
Yeah. When you get that confidence, you're unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, like people can tell you their opinions or whatever, but if you know what's right, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If you don't, like I was the same when I first came in, I didn't know what to do.
Well, the thing is too, and then going backtracking here a little bit, I stopped listening to my instincts because I was listening to other people's, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's, I think that, you know, you can take that advice and, but at the end of the day, I feel like when you're in there, if you feel something 99.9% of the times it's right. And I think that feeling an audience, knowing your audience is a really big part. And that's, you know, so
it's a rare thing too. There's not a lot of guys that know that.
So
that feeling.
I just went back to my instincts and I always felt like my instincts were good and I abandoned those. And that's why I was having problems. Once I just let my instincts take over, I didn't overthink anything.
Right.
I just let things happen instead of thinking, God, what am I going to do next? I have to do this after that. No, I just let it play out and I just acted upon my instincts and everything fell into place after that.
So what led you to leave the WWE in, was it 2005?
Yeah, 2005.
Yeah, because about, so that's, you know, you probably 2003 or four is what we're talking about now. You got your confidence back. You're kind of on a roll. What led you to want to take some time away?
I was really banged up, you know, and I felt like I was on a pretty good roll there. You know, the crowd was really starting to respond to me. And
who were you working with at that time?
It was after we had done our thing.
Yeah, because we worked at WrestleMania 20. Great match.
Yeah, it was. And then I was starting to do a little TV thing with John Cena and then with you. And
that's
then,
right. We did the triple threat thing. Yeah.
And then, you know, I just felt like, you know, the crowd response was really good and all that sort of thing. And then for whatever reason, the timing just wasn't right. You know, and like I said, timing's everything in this business, but it wasn't, it just seemingly wasn't the right time for me to, and I'm not going to question it. And, you know, what if, like, I try not to live in what ifs, you know? So it's like, for me at the time, I was just kind of mentally burnt out just from being on the road for like 8 or 9 years straight without a break. My body was I was hurting. I just felt like I just needed to be home, you know, be home on weekends and be home and kind of live a little bit more normal of a lifestyle just for a little bit. Cause I started on the road when I was 24.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was a kid, you know, and I didn't really have a time to enjoy anything or I needed some time to even grow up a little bit, even mature, you know what I mean?
Cause right.
Find out what kind of person I really was, you know what I mean? And it just that I just needed that time and just, you get on the road like that and it's just like weeks bleed into them to each other. You know what I mean? So it's like, you don't have a time to just breathe and take
it. It's just all wrestling, and reflect on
the things that you've done in your career or, you know, I've missed, you know, birthdays, anniversaries, all these things that, you know, I want to be home for these things, you know, I just needed that break. So my contract came up and I just said I need a break.
But then when you were ready to go back on the road, you went to TNA. You didn't go back to WWE. How did you decide that?
That opportunity came up not long after. And like I said, it was a schedule that was really friendly for what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an up and coming.
Was it like, you know, once a week or something or a couple days a month?
Four days a month.
And you just have to drive to Orlando
Tampa. And back, you know? So I just saw an opportunity there. And
that seems like one of the reasons why a lot of guys go there, because the schedule is really favorable that way.
Right. And I said, I think they were on late on a Saturday night when I got there and that sort of thing. So it was just an opportunity that came up and I took it. And like I said, it was one of those things where, you know, I thought that it would help me even grow a little bit as a performer but also, you know, to the lifestyle that I wanted.
I think it did too. I mean, you were there for a long time and you were kind of leading the charge for 3 years or so there. And you did a lot of really cool stuff. There's Christian Coalition and Instant Classic and all those sort of things.
Yeah, they said it helped me grow and to mature a little bit more.
What kind of differences did you see between the two companies?
You know, obviously just the sheer size of the companies, you know, I mean, WWE is the,
yeah, it's the monster.
It's the number one, but you know, this other one was kind of like one trying to find their identity and had a lot of young stars or up and coming guys.
Yeah.
So that was the difference, really young and, versus established with, you know, top superstars.
Who did you enjoy working with in TNA?
I really enjoyed, AJ Styles. I still think he's awesome. Samoa Joe, you know, Frankie Kazarian, I had some really good matches with him.
Okay. Yeah.
I think he's really underrated talent.
Mm-hmm.
Guys like that, you know.
Did you have any second thoughts when you were going to TNA? Did you let anybody at WWE know, or did you just say, I'm just going to kind of don't worry about it and do it?
It's funny because I said I wasn't really thinking clearly at the time, you know what I mean? It was just an opportunity that came up, and I took it. And
the other thing that people don't realize is the WWE schedule is crushing.
Right.
You know, when you're away from it for a while, you realize just, oh my, it just never ends.
Right.
And I can see why you would do it. I mean, it's not a bad thing at all. I think it's probably a pretty smart move to go to TNA and make a good living and still getting to wrestle and work in some great performers and not having to worry about, like you just told me, you came in late yesterday and you have one day off and you fly out tomorrow. I mean, that takes a lot out of you, man. You know, just being in an airport like that, people don't know just how hard that is.
Yeah, but you know, at the flip side, you get all the perks, you know, WrestleManias, you know, traveling the world.
Big leagues.
Yeah. So
when it was time for you finished your deal with TNA, and then did you send feelers out to WWE and say, I want to come back? Or
I think it was kind of, I just knew that if I was ever going to go back, I had to go back. I was turning 35, and I was like, if I'm ever going to go back, I have to do it now.
Yeah.
And I knew that when I left, when the time was right, I wanted to go back, that I needed that time to, like I said, to explore some other things and then come back when the time was right. And it felt right. And, you know, we worked something out you know, came back and the rest is history.
You know, it's funny. When I left pretty much the same time as you did in 2005, it was for the same reason. I was burned out and just didn't know what I wanted to do. And when I went back, I think I had the best run of my career when I came back. in a lot of ways, it was the same for you. Because right. when you came back, that's when you ended up winning the world championship.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's, I think it's anybody's goal. If you really, truly love the business, you know, mm-hmm. whether it happens or not, but your goal should always try to be the very best.
Or, yeah.
You know, and get to that top spot. And when I came back, they had three shows at ECW also. You know, there was a couple different ideas for me to come back. And then they kind of threw the ECW thing out there. And some people looked at it as maybe as a slight almost, but I looked at it as a huge opportunity.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, like I could be the focal point of this show and I'm
right.
be in the main match every week, have time and really kind of help get reacclimated to the WWE mm-hmm. and, you know.
And established not just to the yeah. fans, but to the boss.
Right. So
how good you are.
So I jumped in with both feet on that and I was like, yeah, I'm all in on this, you know, and I
right.
was really excited about it. And I still look back at some of the ECW and it was some of the funnest stuff that I've ever done. And I was super excited about it. And I was, you know, I have so many like the matches that I had with Jack Swagger, with Regal.
I remember you had a great one with Zack Ryder.
Yeah, I had a great
one of the best ones he ever had.
I had a really good match with Yoshitatsu on there too.
Yeah.
And actually you and I had a really good match
That's
in
right.
ECW.
That's right.
So, you know, I really, really enjoyed it because, you know, it was, like I said, I was the focal point of it and always got a ton of time.
And that's the that's so important, too.
Right.
It's hard to have a great match in 8 minutes.
Right.
You know, including entrances.
Yeah. So, you know, that was exciting. And then when they decided to kind of transfer that or make that into the NXT thing, they mm-hmm. moved me over and kind of went from there. But I really think that it helped me get my feet wet again in the WWE and kind of reestablish myself and kind of move forward from there.
Well, tell us about your journey to the world championship. It was two times, right?
Right.
So tell us. I mean, here you go. You know, we're talking about the kid that you know, Snook said you'd never make it. You know, your trainer said you'd never make it. You know, the guy that always had to try harder and a chip on his shoulder. And now you're, you know, on the way to winning the world title. I mean, that is amazing that you had that opportunity.
No, it's unreal, you know. And like I said, it's kind of one of those things where you say you always wanted to happen. You always, you know, showed up every week being like, oh, this is the week they're going to know how good I am.
Yeah,
that's kind of how I looked at it every week when I came, and then to finally, you know, well, let's, you know, Adam and I wanted to do something together when the time was right,
mm-hmm.
and he was starting that feud with Alberto Del Rio, and him and I were actually we were kind of getting ready to kind of reform our team after that and go on a little run and kind of reestablish that, and then WrestleMania in Atlanta came up and. I think they had a couple ideas for me for matches, but then they were going to have Brodus Clay in Alberto's corner, and they just kind of wanted to focus me being
with
Edge in his corner, which was cool. So we did that, and then lo and behold, you know, I knew he was having a little bit of issues and stuff beforehand, and then he went and had tests the next day after. I know he just wanted to get to WrestleMania and then have it tested, and then after we found out all the information.
The next day.
About his neck, and then, you know, he called me the next week, and I think, you know, I might have been like the first person that he called after he got the call, and you know we talked about it, and it kind of.
He told you he was finished. He had to retire.
He had to retire, and actually, one of my big regrets in my career is that that was at the time when Raw and SmackDown were kind of more separate,
mm-hmm.
and he went to Raw, and I didn't know he was going up until like it was either late Sunday or early Monday that he was going up to do something on Raw to kind of announce his retirement, but. That I wasn't there in person, that I should have.
Right.
That still bothers me,
yeah.
You know, that I didn't call and say, hey, I think I was there the next day on Tuesday when we did something and you know, I won the Battle Royal to become the number one contender mm-hmm. and all that stuff. But it really still to this day bothers me that I didn't go up there for his.
You were just off that day? Or?
Yeah, I was home and then it kind of, like I said, it just.
Gotcha.
You know, I just remember watching it at home and then kind of like being choked up when I was watching it and thinking, you know, man, I should be here for this. And it still bothers me that I missed it. But the next day went and we did it again at SmackDown, which, you know, he always kind of viewed as his show. So
yeah,
that was really important. And then you did the Battle Royal thing. And, you know, I'm not stupid. I mean, I know that opportunity arose because of his
That's how
his
it goes,
injury,
though,
but,
man.
But it's also, you know, what you do with. That's and I right. know that he had been pushing for me to get these types of chances before. And, you know, I've never asked him for anything or any, you know.
Yeah, well, you deserved it.
You know, but I know that he had. You know, he had said things in the past to try to, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, I mean, and you got to think about it, too. Like, you know, and Vince is a funny guy. And, you know, he was the guy that gave you the nickname of Creepy Little Bastard. That was your nickname for a while.
Well, Steve Austin gave me that as a joke. Yeah,
Vince loved it.
Yeah.
You were the CLB.
Yeah, it was kind of started as a backstage joke kind of thing. And
right.
Yeah, that's
and
how
And then Vince thought that was hilarious. Yeah. You can, remember he told you can make a lot of money as a Creepy Little Bastard.
But
but the fact that Vince would even entertain the fact of the former CLB becoming his champion, that's huge.
Yeah, and I also think that, you know, he started to get an appreciation for, you know,
respect
what I was doing as far as the quality of matches. Like, you know, I always felt like I was a guy that go out there and make my opponent look better.
You had great matches with everybody.
And this is
pretty rare.
You know, my goal was always to make the guy that I'm working with.
Yeah.
You know, and I always worked for the match rather than for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel like I'm a very unselfish performer.
Well, the thing is, too, not to interrupt you, but when we came into the WWE in 99, there was, I'm not going to say there was dozens of guys that could do that, but there was at least 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they slowly retired and went away, all that was left is guys like you and me that could do that. And then finally it was just you. There's not a lot of guys that can make everybody look good. From Mark Henry to, you know, Rey Mysterio, anybody can have a great match with him. But I remember seeing you have good matches with Mark Henry and these type of guys. And, you know, making like Zack Ryder, good worker, but you made people believe he could beat you.
Right.
You know, pulling something out of Regal. You know, Regal's style isn't the easiest to work with, you know. You could always do that. And I think Vince really started to respect the fact that I got a guy here that can do it all. And there's not many like him.
Yeah, and I started to appreciate that, and we had a couple conversations too, and you know, he said some very complimentary things to me as far as, you know, what I do. So you know, that was also an extra boost for me.
You know,
that made me want to go out there and work that much.
Vote harder. Of confidence.
Yeah, and so I just felt like the timing was right, and you know, it was a great setting because it was here in Tampa that I won my first world title, second home. You know, you know, I've lived here for so long, and so. That was a huge night.
And it was kind of like it was the pay-per-view after WrestleMania. Is that correct?
Yes.
So it was almost like Edge could not continue and you
kind of
almost took over for him, which is also another really cool
moment,
I'm sure, for you guys.
Yeah.
Because he was there when you won the title.
Right.
He was in your corner.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think the funny thing is, I still have never watched the match. just make that clear. Because I know how it felt. And I don't want anything to taint that feeling. If it looked or felt any different watching it back than when it actually happened, I've still never watched the match back.
That's a great point. That's a great point. You know, especially now that the network is out, I'm getting tweets all the time. Or, do you remember this? Remember this? So I just watched this. And I've watched a few matches, but I don't watch a lot of stuff. People think that you just go home and watch your thing. And it's not like that. Because like you just said, if you have a certain vibe in your mind, you don't need to go back and revisit it. Because heaven forbid, if it's not as good as you thought it was.
Right. You're like, oh, man. So, you know, it was a huge, obviously a huge night. And, you know, then right after that, you know, we had a discussion that, you know, SmackDown was kind of in a little transition period where a lot of the bigger names were moved over to Raw. And it was kind of Randy and I that were kind of left there to kind of steer the ship.
Yeah.
While they were building up some young guys underneath on the SmackDown side.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I dropped the title to him, TV time, you know, 5 days later. And
yeah.
I know there was a... And here's the thing too. It's like, you know, people like, I know there's a lot of people up in arms about that thing, about that too. But you know, you had to look
but what at the, was what was the controversy? Again?
Oh, it took me so long to win the title, and it just like took it away, like, you know, right after.
Was it like a couple days later or something? Or
yeah, no? It was like the next night. But on TV time, it was 5 days. You know,
I got I got you. Right.
You know, so but there was a big picture. You know, and look, regardless of whether I held it for 1 hour or 30 days or 6 years, you know what I mean?
It's, you got it.
Nobody can ever take that away.
That's right.
You know, and there's so many greats in this business, so many guys that I respect and look up to that never even got that chance.
That's right.
You know, so for me to even get that is a huge, it's a huge feather in my cap, you know, and that's the way that I look at it.
My first title reign was 15 minutes. We're talking to Christian about his championship victory that lasted 5 days, caused a huge controversy amongst all your peeps.
I was thinking about that last night, how we just, for no reason, break into Gordon Lightfoot voice.
And sing it, but like where you can't even understand the words.
And then other songs and like even conversations, we just speak like Gordon Lightfoot.
Yeah, whenever I see Sundown on the 70s channel or something, I'll always take a picture of it and send it to DJ. Sundown and we're gonna be saved. Another good one was 3 Minute Warning.
3 minutes and you're in the ring.
You got
wait, we redid the... This is how our version of 3 minute warnings. Ring entrance.
Ring entrance.
3 minutes and you're in the ring.
You got three minutes and you will not sing. You got three minutes and I don't know.
3 minutes and you.
Something about Mae Young was in there. No, or something like that.
3 minutes and you will not sin. 3 minutes, call your next of kin. That's what it was.
Ah, that was good, man. Yeah, stuff that you do when you're on the road.
I think we even had one for the world's greatest tag team. We were even better than the world's greatest
tag
team.
We were, yeah.
We didn't have a name for our tag team. Yeah. Even better than the world's greatest tag team.
Trying to fit that into even better than the real thing. Yeah, well, we didn't have a name for a tag team. We were kind of the Sexy Beasts, which you said you came up with, but that was mine. And Vitamin C was a name that I wanted to call myself. Yeah. But
and I just started calling you C-Man for like
the C-Man.
For no apparent reason.
I ain't no sucker neither. Yeah, good. That Gordon Lightfoot's the best, man.
Yeah.
Sundown by Gordon Lightfoot. Go on iTunes and check it out now. Oh, man. So you got the title taken away, but big picture was you're supposed to win it back. And you and Randy Orton had amazing chemistry. I remember every match you guys had was just 4 stars, 5 stars, whatever you want to rate it.
Yeah. I mean, Randy was like, you know, and the funny thing is, I know Randy got a lot of flack for, like, you know, like he had something to do with it or whatever, but Randy was and still is one of my biggest
supporters.
Yeah. And we have a great relationship. And, you know, he's just, you know, the guy doesn't even realize how good he is. That's the scary thing.
I agree.
And he does everything that he does is on instinct. Everything he does comes naturally to him. Mm-hmm. Nothing is forced. He doesn't try to do anything. It just comes.
Just
to
does
him.
It. Yeah.
And that in turn makes me better.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we work at a different pace. He works at a slow, methodical pace. I work at, you know, a little bit faster pace and then slow it down. Then work a little faster pace, slow it down. So I think the contrast of our styles just meshed really well. And there was just that trust and it was just like one of those things, you know, you have crazy chemistry with some people, and him and I just have it.
You made each other better by being in the ring with each other.
Yeah.
And so you won the title back on a pay-per-view, or was it on TV again?
No, yeah, it was on a pay-per-view.
Wow. So now you're a 2-time champion. I must have thought, because another thing for me, and this was something that was stuck in my craw for years when I won the Undisputed Championship, that was back in 2001. It took me like 6.5 years to win it again, because to me, that's the real proof. Like anybody can get the title once.
Right.
But can you get it again? And that to me is the real vote of confidence from the boss.
Right.
You know, he could have given you that title just for a pop and then that was it.
Yep. But, and then that actually led into a really big SummerSlam match that we had to kind of, I think we went like a solid 5 months, which is kind of unheard of.
Sure.
You know, especially keeping it fresh and keeping the matches, you know, different.
Yeah.
And entertaining. And, you know, that's a long time
for
live television every single week.
In this day and age,
it was a challenge, and we both accepted it and made it work. But, you know, after that after I won it back, it was the kind of final build to SummerSlam, where him and I would kind of have we ended up having one more match after that, which was a cage match, which was also really good, but that was on live SmackDown. But it was supposed to be SummerSlam was supposed to be the kind of the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did one more after that, but it was still... it was pretty special, and then we had the no holds barred match at SummerSlam, which I was really, really proud of.
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones. Would you classify him as one of your favorite opponents?
Yeah, definitely.
Who else would you put in that category?
Actually, you and I have had some really good matches against each other, and even as a tag team.
Yeah.
The funny thing is Edge and I had a really awesome match, and it's kind of, I don't want to say forgotten about, but we had there was a Raw with no commercials.
Oh yeah.
And so it was almost like a pay-per-view feel, and him and I wrestled on that, and it was kind of had that feeling where we hadn't really been in the ring against each other in years.
Yeah.
And it was like, man, this could be really, and I'm just knowing what we felt in that could have been something really special. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I mean, you know, not just saying it cuz you guys are my friends, but you're also, you know,
we have good chemistry.
So it's hard not to. But I would, you know, Randy, obviously, you know, the Hardys, the Dudleys, kind of put each other on the map.
You guys worked quite a bit, or maybe it wasn't quite a bit, but I seem to remember Edge and Christian versus Undertaker and Kane more than once.
Yep.
How did you like working with those guys?
Yeah, I loved it. And I remember the first time that I ever wrestled the Undertaker. You know, you don't get an appreciation for how awesome he is until you see him come out through that curtain.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you legit get scared.
Yeah.
You know, you're standing in the ring. And it's like,
gone.
All of a sudden, it's like, it's just like, it's surreal. And it's like, is this really happening? You know what I mean? Like, that is the type of feel that it has. It's just another level, you know? And to see him come down and get in the ring and then get in there with him. And, you know, once that bell rang, you know, it was like the nerves went away and kind of that chip on my shoulder took over. Like, I got to prove that I deserve to be in here with these guys, you know? And, I really, really enjoyed it. And I know he did too. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, you got to work hard with Taker and Kane too. I mean, they know their characters and they'll sell for you, but you got to
earn it.
You got to earn it and make it count. You also do a lot of good imitations. You got to tell the Jack Lanza story. Jack Lanza, Black Jack Lanza is a guy that he was an agent for the company for years and years and years, famous wrestler, and then worked. When we came in, he was like one of our agents that would give us the finish to matches and stuff. And he always smoked and blow smoke in your face. Yeah. And he was from Minnesota. What did he sound like?
Well, let me tell you something there. I'm going to try to keep this clean, you little bastard.
So you had a match with X-Pac, and the finish was you're supposed to hit him with the ring bell.
Yeah.
And he got cut open.
And he was pretty adamant that I did it with the metal side.
Yeah. X-Pac told you, hit me with the metal side of the bell.
And
so it was just things happened in the ring. It was a mistake, an accident.
Well, there was a bolt on the top, and just the way that it happened, he got cut. And after he was getting stitched up, and I remember come back and he was like, thanks, man. You know, it was awesome. You did exactly what I asked you to do. I appreciate it. And it was great.
Yeah.
God, don't worry about the stitches. No big deal.
It happens.
Yeah. And so he's there and they get stitched up. And I just kind of felt bad. So I was kind of sitting in the corner of the room with my hat on, just kind of sitting there, you know. And then Lanza comes in. He's like, these little guys, they don't have a clue what they're doing out there, you know. He's like, no, Jack, it's okay. I told him that he did what I asked him to do. You know, you got to respect that. And he's like, no, I don't. They don't know what they're doing. And then he turns around and...
If he doesn't know how to hit you with the bell,
he shouldn't be doing it. And he turns around and he sees me sitting in the corner. He goes, and he kind of has this look of shock on his face. He goes, well, you know what I mean? And he walks out the room and Road Dogg just burst out laughing, saying, he didn't know you were there. It was great. but it's fun. Actually, after that, you know, actually Jack and I actually still do to this day have a great, great relationship.
No, he's a great guy. I just love that story. Yeah. If he doesn't know what he's doing, he shouldn't do it. Yeah. Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I've probably been there maybe 2 years at the time. Maybe.
Yeah, yeah. So. I remember. Yeah, the time was when Road Dogg got super blown up, and finished the match early.
No, yeah, he didn't. No, it wasn't that he was blown up. He landed wrong and knocked the wind out of himself.
Oh yeah,
and so we, you know, finished up and came back and
finished up the match early.
And he was chewing me out in the back, blowing smoke on my
Lanza
face.
Was
Oh, you got to do this and you got to do that.
You got to keep him out there.
And he's like, you know, Road Dogg walks by and says, hey, thanks, man. I'm sorry. I had to get out of there early. I'd knocked the wind out of myself. It was good, though, and walks away. And then Lanza just looks at me and goes, oh, can't keep him out there if he doesn't want to stay. After he just chewed me out for
you got to stay out there.
Yeah.
What is your gun to your head, your favorite match that you've ever had, if you had to pick just one?
Oh, man. Well, I think anybody that has been in that position would have to say the winning the world title for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty special.
Right.
It's a different feeling, you know. So I think that it's hard to put anything above that as far as feel-wise.
From the accomplishment standpoint. Right. Yeah. What's your plans now for the future? I mean, I know you're still putting on some great matches. You're still pretty much the same. You haven't lost a step. You've had a couple injuries here and there.
Right.
You see yourself
going
on.
The hilarious thing to me is that it's I went like 15 years without an injury, you know, and then it's like I had a couple fluky ones, a couple ones that, you know, were because of wear and tear. But now all of a sudden, you know, you're like, oh, he's injury prone, whatever. But it's like, you
injury
know,
prone. Yeah.
But it's hilarious. But, you know,
well, I mean, you're in the later stages of your career. You know what I mean? It's definitely
getting harder the before and the after.
Yeah.
When I'm in there, I feel like I never missed a step.
Well, you haven't missed a step. Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, you're still producing the same as you did 10 years ago. Do you see yourself continuing for a long time, or do you have any plans or just going with the flow?
Yeah, I'm kind of just, I always told myself I would do it till it wasn't fun anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I'm having fun and I feel healthy, you know, and I think too, now I know I don't talk a lot about my personal life and I've always been that way, but I've had a daughter.
Oh yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. You already knew that.
I know, but I have to pretend that
I don't. So, but, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. You know what I mean? And if there's any risk of any, you know, health concerns, you know, with injuries or whatever that would risk my future of having quality time with my daughter, I would really have to seriously reevaluate things and say, okay, you know, it's time. Because I, you know, that's the most important thing to me.
Do you see yourself staying on in a backstage capacity?
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, you know, this business has given me everything that I have in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I've put a lot in, but I've gotten a lot out.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I definitely think that I have something to offer.
You've got a great mind as far as putting together matches. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, there's always new challenges. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just have to figure out what the next challenge is after and what's going to challenge me. And I'd also like maybe a new challenge too, you know? So it's, you know, I definitely feel like I have something to offer and to give back. And yeah, I think that would definitely be a possibility when the time's right.
Well, Jay, it's great having you in here, man. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm glad we get to talk face to face and go through some of those funny
times.
Sing
a little Gordo.
What's that?
Sing a little Gordo.
Yeah. Yeah, we could probably tell stories for another 2 hours here.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, if anything else, I would like to try and track down Snooks one of these days.
See if you can get him on the podcast. Yeah, sure, it'd be entertaining. Ask him about the life of a Secret Service collection agent.
I was always his biggest fan. I knew he was going to make it.
I was just trying to give him that extra push.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate you coming in. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back with more Talk is Jericho after this.
Hey, thanks to Christian for an amazing interview. Such a cool guy, longtime friend. Thanks to all of you for listening. I know there's hundreds of thousands of podcasts to schwoz from, and I appreciate that you schwoz mine every single week, twice a week. And thank you for using my Amazon link every time you do your online shopping. Really easy to find. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page, then click on Talk is Jericho. You'll see all three of my Amazon links, Amazon Canada, Amazon UK, and here we go. Everybody's going Amazon! Amazon USA! Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done, helping me and the show out in the process. So thank you very much. Check it out. July 22nd, new Fozzy, Do You Want to Start a War? July 24th, Fozzy live at the Whiskey. And go check out the Tweet Secret app if you want to get personal messages from me every day. Messages of me backstage at Raw, messages of me filming Talk is Jericho. I actually filmed myself recording this episode of Talk is Jericho. So many cool things behind the scenes, access to Chris Jericho. If you're a Jerichoholic, and let's be honest, who isn't? Tweet Secret. Check it out. Go to the App Store and look it up. That's all I got. No more shameless shilling. I'll tell you one other thing, though. This Friday, I got the gorgeous, smart, talented, and tough as nails former WWE Divas Champion Eve Torres Gracie will be here. She was amazing. Such a cool interview. Check it out on Friday. I will be here. You will be here. In the meantime and in between time, that's it. Another episode of Talk is Jericho. Stay hard. Stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. See you Friday. And a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.